Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. We are December 29th, 2011. Last show of the year. How exciting. 2011 over and heading into 2012 at long last. Many years of waiting and lots of hype, of course, about 2012. I have two things to say about that. I hope it's a good year for everybody. But the hype, the Mayan calendar and the galactic crossing and the Nostradamus predictions, my personal belief on all of that is it's a lot of hype. But the other question is, why is it getting so much hype? Why are there Hollywood movies about it? What's so special about 2012? And so I think we take the flip side of this and, you know, take a good look at that question. I think some people out there somewhere, maybe some people that control things, have some plans for 2012. And so, at any rate, I expect things to happen in 2012, but it's not because the Mayan calendar predicted it. In fact, as I've said before, the Mayan calendar has nothing to do with our calendar at all. There are many Mayan calendars, and the main Mayan calendar uses Venus, the cycles of Venus, as its center, the core cycle that it's based on. So at any rate, what is going to happen in 2012? I'm going to have a little bit of a review of 2011 this past year, and then a little bit of looking forward. I'm going to do a few minutes on this show later on in the show on that topic. But the first thing I want to talk about is just the issue in the Mideast right now, the Strait of Hormuz and the Iran saying it's going to sink or close off the channel there. My personal opinion, as you probably already have guessed, is that these are the international dog and pony shows that go on to keep everybody jumping up and down and the stock market at risk and, you know, future war and terrorism and all of this stuff that lends control to the population of the world. So remember that the one has to control both sides of the equation. This is something that the powers have learned a long time ago. So the Russian Cold War with the United States, the Bolsheviks against the Mensheviks, or the against the Tsar, all of these things are promoted and controlled and supported by the same people, the European banking community. So at any rate, I just think this is the latest in the ongoing dog and pony show to keep everybody jumping up and down and running around in a circles like a Chinese fire drill. So anyway, that's all I can tell you about that. I'm not going to do political analysis on this show, and I'm not related to any political party, so I want to make that clear. Sometimes people interpret what I say as, oh, that's a Democrat statement, or that's a Republican, or that's a Libertarian, and like, no, I'm none of the above. So at any rate, okay, I'm going to do a review of Comet Lovejoy, its specific aspect. Now, when big comets come into the solar system, there are many, many aspects to these events, not the least of which is that the NASA theories regarding what comets are just shown to be totally ludicrous and incorrect. Just for those who may not have followed the entire event. Comet Lovejoy was a comet that came into the solar system around, I think it was the 16th, either the 15th or the 16th of December, went through the solar atmosphere, came out the other side as a large planetary body, and then eventually ignited into a comet again. And, of course, the NASA story was that as this was heading into the sun, this was a 600-foot wide object, about the size of two football fields with a dusting of snow, and that's what was causing the enormous tail, something that rivaled the sun in size. And actually, if you looked on the map once I did a real analysis of this, Comet Lovejoy's surface area on the pictures was actually larger than the Sun. So now something a couple football fields in diameter with a dusting of snow can cause such an enormous display, well, is beyond words, but at any rate, it's just fairy tale science at its best. But the so this happened on December 16th. Comet Lovejoy spent a number of hours pummeling through the solar atmosphere, coming out the other side, and all of the predictions from the NASA Trekkies and yay-sayers was that this thing should disintegrate. So NASA had 21 instruments trained on the Sun to get the demise of this comet. Much to their surprise, it came out the other side as a fairly good-sized planet, at least as big as Pluto, and possibly pushing the size of the planet Venus. And then it, after a number of hours of after emerging from the Sun, ignited into a comet again. So at any rate, the point I want to make this week, however, is a little bit different. It has very much related. Now, there are two possibilities regarding the possibility of NASA seeing this. Did NASA see this and not tell anybody? By the way, this was the largest comet ever to come into the inner solar system. Literally was the largest comet to come into the inner solar system. Therefore, one would suspect that this comet was well-established, quite large, and visible coming into the solar system. It was discovered by an amateur in Australia, down under. And, of course, that's the first point on Earth where you start to get a view of the southern sky. We are now in December. And so the part of the sky that these comets come from, and there are many, by the way, another one came in on exactly the same path as Lovejoy from the southern part of the solar system just a couple days ago on December 27th. Exact same path. And I'll be talking a little bit about the paths of these comets. But let's go back to Comet Lovejoy, the biggest comet to ever come into the inner solar system. And, of course, it went in and right into the Sun and then whipped around the Sun and then came out again, as I said, as a big planet. And then, and of course, it must have lost some surface area in the Sun and then became a comet again. But did NASA see this coming? Did NASA track this? NASA has a lot of equipment, and so does a lot of other installations. The Vatican has big equipment down at the South Pole, down in South America. And did they see this coming is the question. Now, there's two parts to this question. If they saw it coming, then they didn't tell anybody. That's rather odd, the biggest comet to ever come into the solar system. They saw it and didn't tell anybody. Or, possibility number two, and by the way, there are only two possibilities here. Either they saw it and didn't say anything, or they didn't see it. They didn't see the biggest comet coming into the inner solar system, and they didn't report it because they did not see it. So this brings us back to the point. Now, many years ago, and I've been talking about the issues of Planet X-type objects, and let me reiterate that there are many, many, many Planet X-type objects out there, big objects in orbits. We don't have the data on these. They're undiscovered, but they can come into the solar system basically from any direction. But there seems to be a concentration of these from the south. The big comet Hale-Bopp in the 90s came from the south. The comet the other day came in from the south. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of these recorded coming in from the south, all pretty much on the same path, coming from the same place. So, once again, Did NASA see Comet Lovejoy coming and not say anything? Or did this bigger than every other comet in history get all the way in towards the sun? NASA didn't see it, and it was discovered by an amateur down in Australia with amateur equipment. Did NASA see it and just didn't mention it, and then just by accident it was discovered before coming into the field of view of the SOHO cameras? SOHO is the solar observatory that is in orbit around the sun and is constantly monitoring the sun. It has two cameras. It has a wide-angle camera and then a narrow-angle camera poised on the sun, constantly watching the solar activity. Well, the wider field of view camera, the C3, the comet was discovered before it got into the field of view of the C3 camera on SOHO. And it was discovered by an amateur named Lovejoy in Australia. So he discovered it just before it got into the field of view of the sun. But now understand, we are in winter, which gives us a very limited, very poor view of the southern hemisphere from that area where Hale-Bopp came from, where Comet Lovejoy came from, where the comet that came in 2 days ago came from. All of these comets are coming in from a particular point, and the only time that field of the sun, that area of the sky, the only time that area of the sky is really visible is in the month of May and June. That's why Harrington, who was the head of the Naval Observatory through the 1980s and into the early 1990s, he was down there looking for something that was called Planet X. It was literally called Planet X, and I believe that posting is still on my webpage. It's the NASA contract with the Naval Observatory, which Harrington was head, to search and discover an object, a large object, down in the southern solar system that was pulling down on the planets Neptune and Uranus. These planets were being pulled down in their orbit. The only thing in the universe that could possibly do that is another large object down in the southern region of the solar system. And because of the position of Uranus and Neptune and the perturbations in their orbits, Harrington pretty much knew the general area of the sky where that massive object had to be. So literally, the NASA contract stated, search for Planet X. Planet X being an astronomical term that is given to any large planetary-sized object that has not received an official name yet. Remember that the names of the planets are donned by an astronomical organization, and they typically take the form of Greek mythological characters, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, etc. And so anyway, Planet X had not been really discovered yet, so it really didn't have a name yet, thus the term Planet X. And of course, Planet X, I have been studying Planet X type objects for longer than the modern craze of Planet X. When I was at Cornell, 1979 to 81, I was talking about these type of objects, although the term Planet X was not in vogue back then. So I talked about planets and these planets, large planets, being the nuclei of comets, and that comets could grow in size. They were actually attracting the tail material and growing in size. And I showed the process that this the physical processes, the physics of this, using electric fields. And the electric fields were caused by conditions within the solar environment. The sun, basically the proton wind, creates a battery, and that battery can be discharged. So anyway, that in a nutshell is the true story. The comets are not dirty snowballs, little icy wanderers. Typically, comets can be very small, but some of them, like Comet Lovejoy, was very large. The nucleus was very large. So once again, when I was on Coast to Coast the other night, I was George Norrie asked me, he said, how come NASA, in this obvious situation where Comet Lovejoy could not possibly be this little teeny 2 football field size snowball going through the solar atmosphere, coming out the other side as a minor planet-sized object and then forming a comet again. He says, how come NASA keeps pounding on this, and why don't they give up the ghost? Comets aren't dirty snowballs. But the reality is that they are Tier 2 scientists. They're there to give a message, and that message is to keep the public from understanding what comets are, because comets are can be big, they can be very dangerous, and they have ravaged Earth repeatedly in history and throughout the history of the Earth. So at any rate, not going to dwell on that topic tonight, but the main point that I want to make now regarding Comet Lovejoy, either NASA saw it coming and didn't say anything, or they didn't see it and they are incompetent. Which one do you want to pick? Either one does not bode well for NASA. And it doesn't bode well for the human population that depends on a space agency informing them of events that could be potentially be Earth-threatening. Comets coming into the sun causing solar flaring, as happened back in October, late September, early October, was a situation in which, yes, Earth was directly affected as the comets came into the sun and caused major solar flaring. That solar flaring did come out and affect Earth weather. And my weather book explains how all of this takes place. It's a complex situation, but understandable by the public if it's all put into perspective. So once again, did NASA see Comet Lovejoy coming and didn't say anything? Or are they simply incompetent and never saw it coming? Take your pick. Okay. Also, every time a new comet comes into the solar system, the data that comes off of these comets, comes back, is 100% confirms my work, which shows these comets are not little icy wanderers. Some of them may have a dusting of ice on them, but that is not the comet process. The comet process is where an object, any object, can be a rock, a hunk of tar, it could be a carbonaceous chondrite, meteorite, whatever it is, the Earth, Jupiter, the moons of Jupiter, the moon of Earth, any object in space, a grain of dust, anything in outer space is discharging the solar capacitor to some degree. And you can see the magnetic effects, you can see the visual effects, X-rays and other effects around our objects. Satellites have a voltage on them, a charging, and the problem is that standard science, first of all, doesn't understand any of these. And then they attribute all kinds of bizarre theories to the phenomenon that are observed. Just as an example, I mentioned spacecraft charging, something that has been observed since the early days of the space program. Scientists observed the charging of spacecraft. Here's what happens in reality. The spacecraft discharges the local solar capacitor, which causes an electric current to pass through that object, around it, and then out into outer space, along the direction of the sun line. Because electrons have a low mass but a very high charge relative to their size, it's called charge to mass ratio, the electrons provide the bulk charge carrier in that discharge. When they come up to an object, like a dust particle, something the size of a baseball or a grapefruit or something the size of Jupiter, it doesn't matter, they will build up a space charge in that area, just like a rock in a river builds up a pressure around the rock. And on the backside of the rock in a river, there is like an eddy current or a stabilized non-current region, and the comet has the exact same thing. That's a region where ions and electrons can combine to become neutrals. And if those neutrals wander out of that area, they can get caught up in the solar wind and be taken out in the solar wind. And that's what spacecraft that NASA designs are looking at. So the scientists think, oh, those are neutrals. Those are things that come off. Those are atoms or molecules that come off the comet nucleus. And sure, they're coming off the comet nucleus, but there's a reason why they're coming off of that area. They're not melting off the comet nucleus. They're coming from a region just behind the comet nucleus in a, what I call the recombination zone. So all of the data that NASA has taken, they unwittingly have proven all of my theoretical models, but they keep interpreting it as if these were dirty snowballs. So at any rate, some of these are clinchers. Some of these are game breakers. For example, when Comet Lovejoy came in, the prediction was, and NASA had 21 of its instruments looking at this object to see it go into the sun and make observations, and their prediction was this comet should disintegrate. It's a couple hundred football fields wide. It might be some material, some solid material, but there's some ice and water ice in there. This would spend a number of hours in the solar atmosphere, emerge from the other side, and then turn back into a comet. How does that little dusting of snow survive the passage through the solar atmosphere? Well, it's absolutely absurd. Now, I want to give something an honorable mention here, too, that magazines Science and Nature. Nature is the English version of the United Kingdom version of the magazine or journal Science. And these are purportedly the top scientific journals in the world. They're the top prestigious journals. If you had something published in Science or if you had something published in Nature, it would be considered a major, major accomplishment because there are many smaller, less popular, prestigious journals out there. Refereed journals, I might add, peer-reviewed journals. But how is it then that something as absurd as NASA claiming that Comet Lovejoy was a little teeny 600-foot-wide ice ball, how could they then publish in Science and Nature magazine? But they do. They have carte blanche to publish articles in there, in these magazines. So it's just the what would you call it, the bandwagon, the clubhouse of these scientists involves a publication, receiving grant money, use of equipment, being able to sit in university classrooms and be the authority. If there's a special that goes on Discover Channel or History Channel or National Geographic special on space, these guys get to be the experts that are called in to give commentary. But how can it be that something so absurdly wrong can continue and be published and talked about and scientific papers continue to be printed in prestigious journals without somebody just throwing up their hands and saying, this has to stop. Somewhere along the line, we just have to stop this. And I don't believe the public believes it anymore. So at any rate, I don't want to belabor this too much, but once again, the very important point that I did not talk about too much before, did NASA see this comet coming? It didn't say anything. Or did it not see it and is basically incompetent and not capable of seeing large comets get all the way into the solar system? This refers back to when I was doing radio 8-10 years ago dealing with the topic of Planet X. There was a cry that went out from astronomers, professional astronomers and their Trekkie followers, that said, oh no, NASA scientists or professional astronomers, if they saw something major coming into the solar system, and they would absolutely report it to the public and everybody would know about it, And then it was pointed out that many big comets got all the way into the solar system and to the inner solar system, and NASA never said a word. So the question was, is NASA really capable of seeing these? And then the other response came back, well, of course they are. NASA has all this equipment. They would see this coming, and they would report it to the public. Well, clearly, repeatedly, comets have come into the solar system. Forget what the name of it was. It was kind of an Irish name, a MacLeod or something like that. I forget. That's not it, but there was a comet a number of years ago. It made it all the way in the middle of the night sky, came past Jupiter, which was high in the night sky, made it halfway from Jupiter to Earth in that region of the sky, and it was finally discovered by an amateur. But there again, and that was a bigger comet, I believe, than Comet Lovejoy. It just didn't get in this far into the solar system. But there again, showing that, number one, NASA either saw this thing coming and didn't report it, or didn't see it coming. So both of the affirmations of professional astronomers and our illustrious National Space Agency are negated. They either see them coming and they don't tell you, or they don't see them coming, which means, and then they fall back on this idea, well, NASA is too important to look at comets. Those are just little things out there. No, we don't look at those. There's really nothing important about them, so we don't waste our time on it. That's what NASA's party line is now, which is absurd because they have an entire program. It's called NEAR. It's the search for near-Earth objects or objects that would cause damage to Earth. And that could include little comets, even if you believe they're dirty snowballs, because little snowballs could crash into Earth and cause damage. So, at any rate, the statements that NASA would see them and tell you that things are coming is simply false. And by the way, this comet that came in following the exact same path as Comet Lovejoy, I would think that would make a little bit of news. This major comet, the biggest one in history to ever come in that far in the solar system, comes in and comes in near the sun. That would be newsworthy. But a week later, a comet comes in on exactly the same path. I would think that'd be noteworthy. But there again, not a peep out of the SOHO crowd or out of the NASA groups that supposedly are catering to these solar little wanderers, as they are called. I should mention, too, and emphasize that Comet Lovejoy came in with a moon orbiting it. This is another indicator of how big the nucleus of Comet Lovejoy was. You can see on the videos that Comet Lovejoy coming into the solar system. You can see on the videos the moon of Comet Lovejoy leading it into the sun. It's right in front of it in the videos. And so, given that it's that far out from the comet nucleus of Comet Lovejoy, I would estimate that it was probably on about a 50 or 60 day orbit. That's just an estimate. But that means that Comet Lovejoy was massive enough to maintain a moon at somewhat a greater distance than our own moon is from Earth. And so it would take a fairly massive object. Now, there's a simple formula in astronomy that you can use. You can look at the period of rotation of an orbiting object, and with a small equation, you can determine the mass of the central object. So here, clearly, there is data, and if NASA saw this object coming with the moon around it, it could clearly calculate the mass of that central object. Any astronomer, any space scientist worth an ounce of salt would know that little equation and could quickly calculate it. So possibly, that's why they didn't want to mention anything, because then all of a sudden, all amateur telescopes would be spotting this object. It would see the moon, It would be able to take data regarding the moon's orbit around the central object, the central nucleus of Lovejoy, and any amateur would be able to make that simple calculation and determine the mass of Comet Lovejoy, and also determine that it certainly couldn't be a 600-foot-wide little object, that it's a massive planet-sized object, trashing the, once again, the little dirty snowball concept of NASA. So at any rate, why do I pound on this? It's very important because as we head into the year 2012, and all of the hype that could come around, there's a lot of people saying Planet X will be here in 2012. Well, personally, I don't have any data myself at this point. But with all of the comet activity coming in from the south, one would start to believe that at some point something might be coming from that direction. As these objects get bigger and bigger, could it be that these are actually precursors to a much larger object coming into the solar system? Why all of the telescopes at the South Pole? Why did Bill Gates simply recently go down and put megabucks into determining to finishing a project down there on telescopes? The telescope project was initiated, I think, with government grant money, and when it kind of went south, when it ran out of funding, Bill Gates went down, put his personal money into this telescope facility down in South America so that it would be completed. Why is there so much interest in big telescopes in the south? Why has everybody got their eyes trained down there? Something's going on here, folks. And so could it be that 2012, we're going to start to get details. We're going to start to see this. Remember that, let me explain a little bit about how comets develop, and that might bring some, shed some light on this activity. When comets are in the very, very far reaches of the solar system, they really haven't ignited the solar capacitor yet, so there's just a nucleus out there. Let's imagine that there's a Pluto, or I'm sorry, let's imagine that there's a Jupiter-sized planet out, and this is hypothetical, I want to make this clear, but let's imagine that it's way down in the southern solar system, coming from the same region where these objects are coming from, Comet Lovejoy and all the other comets that are coming in from that region. Say this object is still three times the distance to Pluto. What's it doing? What's going on out there? Well, first of all, it's very cold. It's moving very, very, very slowly. Only when these objects start coming into the solar system, about the range from the sun of the planet Pluto, but remember, this is not in the plane of the planets. This is down low in the solar system, coming in on a path that would bring it into the possibly the inner solar system if it's following the same path as these comets. So here's an object that's very, very difficult to see. Even with extremely good telescopes, amateurs would be faint to see this. Amateurs, probably with the best amateur equipment from ground-based stations, even from down south, would probably not be able to see the nucleus. As the nucleus comes in to maybe one or two times the distance to Pluto, it starts to discharge that region out there. That's, I call it the donut nebula. That's that region of ionized gas and dust held back by the solar wind. We see these around other stars, but basically they're mistermed a planetary nebula, but basically it's a cloud of dust and gas that's way out beyond the solar system, held back by solar wind pressure. So the big object would start to discharge that capacitor, forming a cloud around it. Okay, now you have a problem. If you have any kind of equipment, infrared equipment, or if you have, say, amateur, the really, really good amateur ground-based equipment, you're not going to see it once again because the nucleus is shrouded in a cloud of dust and gas. Now this object starts to move in to the far reaches of the solar system. It's picking up steam. It's starting to move a bit faster, but it's starting to pick up a bigger haze cloud. But this haze cloud is big. It's probably the size of the sun or larger, possibly two or three or four times the size of the sun, but very diffuse. And it's blocking visibility of the inner nucleus. So you need a very special type of telescope to see such an object, a very diffuse cloud of dust and gas, very cold, moving very slowly at the far edge of the solar system. It's a very specific, very advanced, very large, very expensive piece of equipment that could even detect this, and probably spaceborne a spaceborne telescope that would not have the Earth's atmosphere interfering with the view. Okay, so once this object gets in to approximately the distance of possibly Neptune or Saturn, but remember, it's not in the plane of the planets. It's down below. It's coming in from down below. Now you have the problem that it's, that area of the sky is not visible except in the month of June, May, and June. So how is the average person going to know that there's something coming in down there if NASA isn't going to tell you and they see it coming? They're under orders, I guarantee you, not to tell the public. This is going to be the best kept secret in the world. And then possibly some amateur from Australia might get a glimpse of it if there's any discovery by amateurs, or if there is any kind of information that leaks out, then NASA has its cover story. Oh, that's just a 600-foot wide little ice ball. Don't worry about it, just like Comet Lovejoy. The only trouble is that Comet Lovejoy went all the way through the sun, came out the other side ticking, and everybody saw it. Everybody saw it. Everybody can look and see that NASA's story isn't correct. So if you are thinking people, if you are investigative people, you will understand what the charade is. What's the game plan here? Is 2012 going to be the year in which we get our first glimpse, possibly, of Planet X? What is going to be the misinformation ploy that goes out? And I've always said, in talking about this topic, and there does seem to be a specific one that would be coming from the south, a big, big planet that's coming from the south. And that just seems to correspond with actually professional astronomers' work. Harrington from the Naval Observatory. I guess you can't get much more professional than that. What would be the, at that point, the question is going to be, it's going to be kind of a big, there's going to be a huge amount of misinformation coming out. And I've always said, too, that there are radio shows, big name radio shows, talk radio shows that refuse to talk about this topic. If you want to see who the real talk show hosts are, the ones that control their own show that aren't controlled, look for the ones that will speak about Planet X. I'm talking about the big shows. And if you want to see a show that's controlled, and what we call a fishing show, one that's out there to make you think that they're really fighting for you, but they talk about all the topics instead of the most important topic on the planet, if they always sidestep that topic, that's going to give you an inkling of what's going on. They're out there to grab your attention, and then when the real issues hit, they're going to have the public's attention because they've covered all of these other topics, whether it's the banking interests, or it's the New World Order, or fighting to, you know, bring information to you about all kinds of topics. But when it comes to the big topic, the one that's going to possibly bring the entire world down to its knees, an object coming in from the far edges of the solar system, then those radio shows will fold like an old suit. So at any rate, that's why I'm concentrating on this issue of Comet Lovejoy. Why is it so important that I analyze it in this aspect? Why do I take a whole show to talk about this? Did NASA see Comet Lovejoy coming and didn't say anything? Or did they not see the biggest comet ever to come in the inner solar system, and they're incompetent? I think they saw it coming, and they did not announce it because it had a companion. Let's go back to Hale-Bopp back in the 1990s. One of the big issues was that when Hale-Bopp was first discovered, it was discovered by two amateurs, Alan Hale and a guy named Bopp from, I think, Japan. And so anyway, of course, right away there was a flurry of camera work. One guy that I knew quite well, a guy named Chuck Schrammick, went out in his backyard. He was an amateur astronomer, snapped some pictures, ended up sending to Art Bell, who posted them on his webpage and said, hey, look at, Hale-Bopp's got a companion. It's got something orbiting it. And then some other pictures came through from the observatories, the professional observatories in Hawaii, through a guy named Courtney Brown. Courtney Brown was a professional astronomer and doing some independent work, but he got the slides, and he sent the slides he got to Art Bell also. So here are two sets completely independently procured showing Comet Hale-Bopp with a companion. Well, as it turns out, then the astronomers at Hawaii reversed their decision, made a public statement that this was ridiculous, that Courtney Brown and Chuck Schrammick, which is very odd. How would Chuck Schrammick and Courtney Brown didn't even know that each other was sending pictures to Art Bell? Why would those two guys, independently, not knowing what each other was doing, doctor pictures giving this exact same results of a moon orbiting the nucleus of Hale-Bopp and send it to Art Bell? Why would those two guys independently do this? Well, as it turned out, Hale-Bopp did have a companion. In fact, it was the main and first primary topic of discussion at the Professional Astronomers Union meeting in the Canary Islands that followed the appearance of Hale-Bopp. So it was well designated that Hale-Bopp had a companion. But what does a companion allow you to do? It allows you to calculate the mass of the central nucleus, a gravitational field. It's a very simple equation. You take the orbital period of that moon around the central object, you do a quick calculation, and it gives you the mass. Now, it would be very clear that the mass of Hale-Bopp was not some little dirty snowball. It was a major planetary object, just like the nucleus of Lovejoy. The difference with Lovejoy and Hale-Bopp is Hale-Bopp never got that close to the sun to rip off its coma, the comet, the cloud of the around the comet nucleus. But Comet Lovejoy did. Comet Lovejoy went through the sun, and as it came out, you saw the planetary core. You saw the planetary core of Comet Lovejoy, and it was a planet. It was every bit as big as the planet Mercury. So, like I say, every time NASA tries to build up this story of a dirty snowball, and every time a comet comes in, it totally reverses their story. But they keep on with it, and that's the curious part also. Why do they keep up this charade? So at any rate, I think it's really important to pound on this topic. And some people might be saying, well, we get the picture. We understand. Okay, well, we're going into 2012, so if things start to happen in 2012 relative to the sky, relative to seeing things in the sky, now you can understand why I keep pounding on this. This is like Lesson 101, Astronomy 101. The biggest lie that is going to be perpetrated is when something comes into the solar system, it will appear as a large comet. And I've also pounded on this topic throughout my shows over many years. Now there might be some new people out there go, oh, Planet X, I want to do an internet search on Planet X. what you're going to come up with is more misinformation than you can shake a stick at. And one thing you're going to see repeatedly is all kinds of clowns running around, jumping up and down, talking about 2012, the end of the world, things like this, aliens, they talk to aliens, maybe God talks to them too, who knows. But all kinds of things just to make this the craziest topic on the planet. But the one thing all of these newbie, wannabe, 2012, the end of the world people have in common, when they talk about Planet X, they purport it, they show it as a large orange ball. That's going to leave a message in everybody's mind that Planet X is a big brown dwarf, and it's going to look like Jupiter. It's going to be a big orange ball in the sky, and that's what Planet X is. Well, that's completely wrong. Planet X, when it appears, if it appears one of these days, I have a feeling there is something down there in that southern solar system, and it's going to raise its ugly head sometime. I don't know. Maybe 2012 is the year. We'll see. But when it does, it is going to ignite into a large comet. Therefore, all the misinformation about Planet X. And once you understand that, you can see how all the misinformation is designed to fool 95% of the public. Why? Because if people had an inkling that something that big and that powerful and that dangerous was coming into the solar system, society and society as you know it would break down, simply break down. So is it good to tell people that something is coming or bad? Well, I've been through this. I remember being on the Art Bell show talking with him about it. And I've talked with other talk show hosts. I think I discussed it with George Norrie one night. And most people think that, yeah, you really don't want to tell everybody. You don't want to tell everybody because things would just go goofy. You'd rather just let them go to the last minute. But that's the problem. At the last minute, when everybody does find out, and they will find out, they'll look up in the sky, they'll see something up there, it's going to be a giant raging comet, NASA's going to be running around going, oh, that's just a little dirty snowball, and the public won't believe them at all, but that's when the place will come unglued tenfold, because the public's going to realize that, wait, NASA's been preparing, they've been digging caves, they've been preparing, they've been using the national resources to build caves and build a future for themselves where they would be protected, and they're leaving the public out to dry who paid the bill. Gee, that sounds like a familiar story in Washington these days, doesn't it? But at any rate, the point is that if you don't tell people, the end result is going to be 10 or 100 times worse than if you did tell them. If you did tell them, well, sure, there's that element of society that would go out and rampage and loot and steal. But the one thing that I guarantee you is going to happen in all scenarios is that the people who now consider themselves the leaders of the world will lose all control. And there, in a nutshell, you have the lesson of the day. Why does NASA talk about dirty snowballs? Why don't they recognize that something going through the sun, Comet Lovejoy, coming out the other side as a small planet, then igniting into a comet again, and they publish articles in Science and Nature magazine like, this is sure that was a dirty snowball 600 feet wide. Of course it was, you know. Why do those magazines allow it? Because they're told to do it. They're controlled. Why do the top radio shows on the planet not discuss this? This is major news. This is major news. The other thing that happens with theoretical structure in the standard scientific community is once you realize that comets are not dirty snowballs, there is a domino effect. Other scientific theories of where the planets came from. How did our moon get here? What's the moon doing? What's the effect on Earth? Well, there are electrical effects. All of these real concepts would have to come pouring through. How about the fact that there is so much electrical power flowing by Earth every day? We could simply tap into that and not have to use coal or oil or nuclear. Why are we polluting all the waters of the world? And we don't need to. There's plenty of free electrical energy moving by the planet every day, and the methods of tapping into this are known. What is the problem here? Obviously, energy is one of the biggest controlling factors on the planet. It's going to be the cause of the next world war. They're talking about shutting down the Strait of Hormuz and blocking the 40% of U.S. oil from leaving that region of the world. We don't need that oil. We don't need any of it. We don't need a drop of it. We don't need all the oil we get from all the other places on the earth. And we shouldn't be burning all that oil every day. It's absurd. We're using the oxygen that we breathe. And when we get done burning the oil, it pollutes the water that we drink. How crazy is that? So, at any rate, you see that all of the implications of understanding true science about what comets really are has implications that reach into every aspect of our life. It also would point us in a direction that, gee, maybe we should be spending some of our resources to get our population into outer space en masse, not some rinky-dink NASA program that's going to put another man on the moon in 25 years. What is that going to do for the human race? We get the president of the day gets to wave a flag and have a speech. By then all the Apollo astronauts will be dead, probably, if they went to the moon at all. That's another story. Will NASA go to the moon? It's preventing the population of Earth from going where they have to go. The future. We're spending all of our time on this planet running around, jumping up and down, fighting little wars and petty wars here and there, worrying about terrorists who are constructed terrorists, and the real issues. And it does come back to the idea of what comets are, because if people knew that comets were not dirty snowballs, if they were planet-sized objects, some of them were planet-sized objects that could become planets, it would give us a whole new view of the universe. I'm going to switch gears right now. As most of you know, I have name-branded the water filter products, including the water filter elements. There's a new dome water filter element, a little fat water filter element that has 2.5 times the capacity of the standard 7-inch vertical water filter element. And I'm not going to say a lot. I think I'm just going to let the web page do the talking. All of that information is there. I did want to stress a couple items. The new modular filtration and storage system, it's a water filter. It comes with two of the new dome filters. And it has three storage tanks of 6.5 gallons each, so you can store up to 19.5 gallons of fresh filtered water, and you can also buy extra tanks, and you can have a system that will grow with your needs in units of basically 13 gallons. They're sold two at a time, the extra tanks. I wanted to stress those. That's something new on the web page. The dome filters are new. The dome filter is also available with the plastic. If you purchase the plastic high-density polyethylene filter in the past, the new dome filters fit in that. And also I wanted to stress that in emergency filtration, consider also putting with your system the fluoride arsenic filters. Because in flooding situation or in a situation where you have an emergency, your source of water isn't going to be nice, clear tap water. It could be sludge. It could be a lake. It could be polluted with volcanic fallout, dust from a volcano. And so the fluoride arsenic filters. Typically, the point is that most water sources in the United States that come from groundwater have arsenic. And also, the systems have been designed so that the pre-filter, the universal ChemRad oil pre-filter, which filters out chemicals, radiation, pollution, and oil with disposable oil, disposable powders. That fits all of the water filter systems, all of the large water filter systems, including the new modular system. So, okay, that's enough. Just go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and check it out. See what is new in the way of products there. We still have Mountain House freeze-dried food that is available, and then, of course, my books, CDs, DVDs, which give you the basis for understanding what I'm talking about on my radio show, the science, the true science of how the solar system works. And isn't it ironic that we have a national budgeted space program that is giving out completely incorrect information to the public, and where a lot of people are turning now for correct information about weather, space weather, about interpreting how the solar system works, the basis for the workings of the electrical nature of the solar system. They're turning to a radio show paid for by someone who buys his own airtime. I think it's so ironic, but it's just the sign of the times. It's just the way things are today, and so be it. But I have a much bigger audience now. I was kind of laughing with this with some people the other day. We were chuckling, and one of them said, "Just imagine if I'd still be at Cornell University and worked myself up through the ranks, publishing in the respectable peer-reviewed journals, and had some niche where I could actually continue publishing my work. It would go unnoticed. Nobody would know about it, and the society would continue on. And I wouldn't have an audience at all. As it is now, millions of people around the world, if not more, know exactly who I am and what my message is, and I can tailor this message to say exactly what I want without it being interpreted seven times and filtered through misinformation channels before it's seen by the public. So at any rate, I just think that's ironic the way those things work. But about out of time here, got a couple seconds left, so once again, I'm glad this year is over in a sense, and I'm looking forward to 2012, actually. I'm just going to play it by ear and hope that we have a good year. Once again, make sure you are your own source of filtered water. Good night.